Can anyone hear me?
I can hear you.
Great. Oh, okay. Sometimes my computer goes into Bluetooth mode.
How are you doing, Eric?
I'm doing well, Jack. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
And Michelle, I sent you a link in case you're interested.
We have our first tennis match this week. They're letting us play.
Yes, I heard that.
I told them if Kathy Griswold was on the school board, we wouldn't be allowed to play. she would have shut us down.
No. I'm only against renegade fraternities of over 100 at a party in violation of the executive order. But okay. I have a friend whose son was a social director of that fraternity that did all the damage up north.
Yeah.
Fortunately, he was in Spain at the time.
Oh.
And he was telling his mother how concerned he is because he's back in town.
Well, you know, we can start the meeting because Michelle is here.
Maybe. And I'm not going to have any anger management problems because I just had a chocolate fudge ice cream cone.
As long as you give me a thumbs up or thumbs down, you're good.
I'm surprised you didn't order something more adventurous. Like, I'm always intrigued at what they have at Blank Slate. I talked to Kathy earlier today. She was at Blank Slate. They have really neat things like salted caramel or they just have interesting things.
Yeah. They had blueberry pancakes.
Oh, yummy. I would have gotten that.
I know. Well, I wanted something chocolatey.
Peter and I always have this dispute because any dessert, he wants like the chocolatiest, the most chocolate thing. And I'm looking for something more nuanced and subtle.
Okay. And
I'm subtle.
I'm not.
I had heard that about you.
Yes. I have some news.
What's that?
And that is the name Joyce Parker sounded really familiar to me. And it turns out she was my good friend's next door neighbor.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, small world.
Next door neighbor where? What neighborhood? I mean, is that nosy?
Polo Fields. No, it's...
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I have a friend who lives like adjacent to the Polo Fields. She sort of backs up to the Polo Fields. I'm pulling up the agenda now for the meeting because you said you wanted me to chair. Is that all right? Is that still true, Kathy?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'll do crowd control.
Yeah, you handle the mobs.
It's a short agenda. She should be able to get them within the 2 hours that we've allotted her.
Oh, yes. And the mayor sends his condolences via Christine that he's on vacation. I don't think Christine realized that the mayor never attends, but she did send a nice email.
All right. Hey, Ollie.
I'm on the road, and I'll only be here for an hour, and my voice is shot. So I'm here mostly as a participant.
Where are you going, Ollie? Where are you on your way to?
Fowlerville. A family get together, a birthday party.
Nice. Okay. All right. Let's get this show on the road. Ollie, is there any, since you have a time crunch, I should ask you, is there something you want to talk about first to in your timeline? What?
I appreciate it. I think we should talk about Lori Karras.
Okay. All right, so I'm just going to quickly start this meeting and announce that we're going to do this the way we've typically done meetings. We're going to go through every item. If we don't have anything to say, we're going to open it up to anybody who has attended this meeting and wants to contribute. Um, if we're going to have our discussion first on each agenda item, and we're going to start talking about Lori Terrace because Ali is here and is going to have to leave us. So Lori Terrace is item, which item is it? I'm scrolling.
You can work on your consent agenda. You know, go through your consent agenda. I should have plenty of time.
Okay. All right. So does anybody among our membership, our council members, have anything that you're likely to pull from the consent agenda that they'd like to talk about?
No.
No? Okay. Jack and I got a couple emails about CA4.
You are unmuted.
The affordable housing waitlist policy. And so I'm going to probably be pulling that so that I can ask questions of staff. The communication that we got was from somebody who was concerned that the system of getting on the waitlist needs to be accessible and easy to navigate because it's challenging. Like the people who are having housing security issues are also likely to have a lot of other challenges, you know, accessing anything online. And
right.
So the feedback I got was that Barrier Busters is a program that's easily accessible, and it's important that whatever the affordable housing wait list, however it's structured, it needs to be very accessible. And, you know, what the constituent was basically asking, like, how are we making sure that we're going to reach out to the people we need to reach out to? Is Anne here?
Yes.
Because Anne, you're on the HHSAB. Is that the right acronym? You're on the Housing Commission. I'm curious, like, I know that there was some discussion about it. I talked to somebody, came to my coffee hour this afternoon who had been to the meeting where this was discussed. Maybe Anne, do you have any feedback on what I just said about a constituent's concern?
She was having technical difficulties before, but it looks like she's in.
Hello. Hi, Anne here. I'm having a lot of technical difficulties. I'm on the phone, but I just caught the tail end and Elizabeth of what you were mentioning.
Okay, so my question was the CA4, the affordable housing waitlist policy. Jack and I had a constituent reach out to us with concerns that this program and the accessibility of the waitlist needed to be, she was concerned that the people who actually are most in need are going to, is the system going to be accessible and available so that somebody maybe who doesn't have internet or somebody, how are they doing outreach to make sure that the people who really need it are going to be able to get on this waitlist? Do you know anything about that, Anne?
Not by memory. I believe that they did have various procedures in place to try and capture everybody that they thought might be interested through some hard copies and through various websites. And they were making provision for people who didn't have internet, but I don't have that off to report to you at this moment.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that, Anne. Anything else on the consent agenda that anybody is likely to pull?
Well, I do appreciate you bringing that up tonight, you know, with how people can access the waitlist. It does raise, you know, quality issues. The only way to do this without assistance is online. I don't know if that's really where we need to be right now. We've been given assurances that folks who don't have internet will have means and ways, but it really troubles me that the formal process does take internet, you know, accessibility. And
The question really is how well social service agencies are connecting with clients and doing the assistance of having the client maybe sit next to them while they're doing the computer thing. I mean, if the person doesn't have online access, I'm probably going to pull that and I'm probably going to ask staff about this just because the constituent was very concerned about it. It feels like when I ask questions on topics like this, the answer is usually fairly reassuring. But I think it's important to understand, like, are we, or just think about, like, are we using all the avenues? You know, I did notice something else on the consent agenda that we've talked about in the past, and I don't know if we're going to repeat a similar discussion we had before, the Fuller Park parking lot land lease, CA6. Does anybody have anything to say about that?
Sure. So a couple of us have been sitting in with staff, with meetings with the university. They're expanding how many hours per day and days per week they can use these parking lots. They've increased the price dramatically. My position really is that because our budget is such a mess, that we really can't turn down a source of revenue at this point in time. It includes a significant increase in the price in reference to their increasing their rates to their employees. I think they went from blue to gold or something like that. I forget, yellow to blue, or I don't know their color codes. But and there's also a clause in there where if they increase the rates on any of these lots or decrease the rates, that in the next year of the lease that it would be reflected there. So I think that it took care of some of my concerns. I would prefer that this be parkland rather than parking lot, but the fact is that we really can't pass up a source of revenue at this point in time.
All right, I'm gonna ask, is there anything else that we wanna talk about on the consent agenda?
Well, just on that last issue, questions about, and we were asking for like PD stations and more infrastructure to be a part of the compensation that we receive. And unfortunately, that didn't come back this year. Another issue that we raised last year. I mean, I can't say I will object to this agreement, but it's, you know, our carbon neutrality goals and ways that we can help further those, I hate to say it, goals again, but you know, I remember Jeff Hainer taking a good 5 minutes expressing his concerns with the lack of EV stations, and many of us in agreement with that, and nothing came, as a result. So I hope someone brings that up tomorrow.
I remember that conversation the same way you do, Ali. You're breaking up a bit, but yeah, I remember that as well. Okay. I'm going to ask if anybody who's in attendance at this meeting has anything on the consent agenda that you'd be interested in talking about. I think you hit *9 to raise your hand. Or is everybody's sound on? I don't know how.
Michelle is on with video. The only person who isn't is Bradley Parsons, and I'm going to send him the link right now.
Okay. But if they wanted to talk, they could hit *9 on their phone, right?
Yes. Bradley just joined us.
So Bradley, if you just joined us, we're just talking about the consent agenda. We're about to move on to the rest of the agenda. I've got the participants open, so I'm going to pay attention to who's got their hand raised. So Ali, would you feel comfortable with us going through the agenda in order? Or do you want us to talk about Lori Karras? I can't hear you. You're muted, Ali.
As host,
go in order.
Go in order?
Sorry.
Okay, go in order. Okay. All right. So I'm going to skip the public hearings and just go in order. Let's see. B1. This is going to be the zoning from PUD to C3 of the property on Plymouth Road. This is where they're going to put the hotels and what is it, a Panera, I think? Kathy, I think this is your ward. Do you have any feedback about this project? Didn't we postpone it?
We postponed it, and we did ask staff to provide a better traffic pattern. One of the problems is we had the CVS that was moved from across the street. Then we added Plum Market. Now we're going to have a drive-through restaurant and a hotel, and I have no problem with the height of the hotel. It can be any reasonable height, 10 stories even. The problem is the traffic flow. You basically have three individual lots, and the traffic does not flow well between them, and there's significant delivery with semi-trucks, and semi-trucks are sometimes backed up on Green Road waiting to get in, and you have a lot of like storage pallets for some reason piled up. And so the request that I believe Councilmember Lum made is for staff to look at it and come up with a comprehensive plan for internal traffic flow as well as external traffic flow out onto Plymouth Road, because the driveway out would be right next to the southbound exit ramp from US 23. And cars are going very fast, especially when they get a green light coming off the freeway ramp and they don't have to stop. In one case, there was a collision and a car went airborne and ended up about 20 feet up on a berm in front of Plum Market. So that just gives you an indication of how fast cars are going. Obviously, they shouldn't be, but I don't think that we can make it safe for cars to be making a left-hand turn there. There's significant turning motion from multiple driveways in that area.
Well, there's a street. They're not going to be coming out on Plymouth. They're going to be coming out that street. You're saying the left turn on that street is hazardous?
A left turn onto Plymouth Road. They would either come out onto Plymouth Road or they would go back to Green Road and then make a left-hand turn from Green Road.
It looks like Green Road is where they would be making the left-hand turn.
Well, they could, but the other problem is there's not really an internal street right now. It's just a lot of parking lots and internal driveways that are next to each other.
Okay.
So it needs to be... Streamlined isn't the right word, but we need an internal street and we need a way to direct traffic internally.
Okay, I'm looking at the hands up. I've got Jack and then I've got Eric. So Jack, what do you want to say?
So yesterday, Jane sent us all an email regarding this project, I think at about 2:45 p.m. And she's just explaining that she's asked for responses from legal staff about issues in the development agreement. And she's not yet received any response. And so if we get something late tomorrow, right before the meeting, I'm willing to postpone this again so that we have time to ponder the advice that we get. But I share her concerns because she conveyed those concerns to the city attorney's office. They're privileged and I get to talk about them, but I share those concerns and I would like to see the response from the attorney's office before we take any final action on this.
Okay, so Eric, what did you want to say?
Well, I know when it was a big boy, you could not turn left onto Plymouth Road. There was a no turn on left onto Plymouth Road. And the other concern would be when you're going out to Green Road, that road is very small. So you're putting now a lot, potentially a few more cars on it. I think there needs to be some sort of, traffic plan, but I think Kathy could probably, give better detail on that. I just know I used to go there all the time and there's, that's very narrow.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Does anybody else have anything to say on this topic?
Well, I would just concur with my colleagues on what was said. It's not the height of the building, but the traffic patterns and no collection of cars exiting the development. There's a lot of entry and exit points, and I think perhaps having a little bit more time would be the best thing to do right now. As Councilman Green has said, just so that whatever goes there, you know, we're going to live with for 30 years, 40 years. So we might want to take a little extra time, make sure what we live with for the next 30, 40 years is the best decision.
All right. Kathy?
Yeah, I just want to mention that traffic on southbound Green Road, where we're proposing that cars exit and vehicles, including semi-trucks, the traffic is so heavy southbound on Green Road that we already have two left turn lanes from Green Road to Plymouth Road. And Councilmember Lum and I spent considerable time out there with constituents looking at that area because the proposal was to add a bike lane, a northbound bike lane in that area. And one of the problems was the backing up of semi-trucks in that area. And it's a very large intersection with fast traffic, and the bike lane on the south side of Plymouth Road on Green exits the roadway and goes up on the sidewalks, actually cross the intersection. So I think it warrants some engineering before we approve this project.
I see Bradley Parsons wants to contribute. What do you want to say,
good,
Brad?
Good, yeah.
You might have to unmute him.
I don't think he's muted. Let me see.
Nope, he doesn't look like he's muted.
Yeah, you can just speak up, Brad.
Can you hear me now? Sorry.
Yeah, we can hear you.
I've been on my end. Okay. Sorry, this isn't the topic that I was actually wanting to chime in on, but I just want to clarify with the Green Road reconfiguration that Kathy was just talking about. The through lanes were going to remain. It was the northbound side that was going to lose one lane, which already gets lost anyway because of a merge not far down the road. So I just want to make sure that when we're talking about bicycle infrastructure and traffic, that we need to have places for non-motorized vehicles to go. And I think the situation that happened in Ipsy, the tragic situation last week, is an illustration that cars and bicycles are going to share the road no matter what. There's going to be situations where it happens. And it's okay to have a bike lane if we can keep those through lanes. It wasn't going to impact traffic, that Green Road road diet, or lane reconfiguration, whatever you want to call it. But I do commend Councilmember Griswold to say that engineers should look at it again. But I don't think we should just discount the idea that active transportation has a place there. That's going to be a busier and busier intersection for all users. So we got to figure it out. I just wanted to chime in with that. And thank you all for what you do.
And I just wanted to clarify, I was not suggesting that we remove any lanes or that I assumed that we were going to in terms of the left turn lanes. I just want to repeat that it is a very complex, high speed intersection. And we have to make it safe for all users. I've crossed Plymouth Road there, and I'm always very, very cautious whether I'm on a bike or just walking.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that, Kathy. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. Okay, I'm going to lower your hand, Brad. Let's see.
Don't you feel empowered when you can do that?
I think I do. Wait, am I? Am I able to lower it? I think you might have to, Kathy.
Oh,
I'm not sure I'm
okay.
able to.
You have to make her a host.
I'll make you a host, and then you'll be more powerful. I'll take care of this right now, though.
Okay. All right. Next on our agenda is, well, let's see, there's the site plan, which we basically talked out, I think, that whole Plymouth Road thing. We have four public hearings this week. One, it's matched sets of zoning and site plans. So the next one is on Jackson Road. This is in Ward 5, Ali. So this is the hotel that was previously the Michigan Inn. And it's being redeveloped. You want to talk to us about that, Ali? Do you have any concerns about it?
Well, just in my hoarse voice, you know, if we're not changing the use of that area. It was, you know, used as a hotel way back when, and it's been, you know, an area of blight for two decades at least. So it'd be good to see some revitalization, tax base use. It's perfectly situated for this kind of use. It's got the infrastructure in place. I really don't have a problem with this kind of redevelopment. This makes sense, and I haven't gotten any feedback from constituents who are concerned with anything that's going on to this point with that place, you know, with that site. So this is one of the good stories where you don't have a whole lot of controversy, where you're just taking something that was used this way before and bringing it up to, you know, 2020 standards.
Yep, I agree. Does anybody else have any comments about this? All right, excellent. That's a good one that we're going to be able to vote on that will not have controversy. So Kathy, I think you have feedback for us on DC1. The resolution to endorse statewide crosswalk law.
Yes, this has been on the agenda for many months, and I'm going to postpone it. It's really a placeholder and to remind us that we need to have an evaluation of our pedestrian and cycling environment by a Vision Zero engineer. Council made the commitment to do that and approve the funds. Due to COVID and for many other reasons, it's been delayed. I talked to Tom Crawford about it last week. It should be moving forward. And so once we get the report from the Vision Zero engineer, then we'll be ready to consider this. At the same time, it's really a formality because it's a state law, and it's something that MDOT needs to be more engaged in. And I mentioned this last week when we had the connected vehicle corridor presentation, as well as North Main, because MDOT controls Business US 23 and Business 94, which includes North Main, Huron, and Washtenaw. And so they're constructing crosswalks to their standards that are not necessarily the standards of the city of Ann Arbor. And so there's an inconsistency there. We did have a meeting with Council Member Lum and Council Member Ackerman last week with our state representative, Yusuf Rabi, State Senator Jeff Irwin. We're planning a strategy to engage the University of Michigan leadership and then get back to MDOT and apply some political pressure to get the crosswalk upgraded still this year. I'm here on near Thayer, where we had the critical injury crash early 2019.
I see that Bradley Parsons has his hand up. Do you have a comment you want to share?
Yeah, just real quick, Kathy, I really appreciate what you're doing here, and I agree with the postponement. I also agree that we shouldn't postpone on Huron and Thayer. So thank you for a really, really important crosswalk. I just want to share a little bit that I've only been in Denver for 6 years now, but I've seen some pretty radical changes that have occurred. I grew up in Southern California. I spent my upbringing there, 30 years there, and people stopped for crosswalks there. I spent 9 years in Iowa City, in Iowa, and people stopped for crosswalks there. It's just a cultural thing that happens. When I first got to Ann Arbor, people did not stop for crosswalks. It was really scary to try to cross the street, especially with a young child. And I want to tell you all that things have changed. The culture has changed here in Ann Arbor. It is different now.
Is that the end of your comment, or did your sound cut out? Okay.
The host will be informed that you would like to speak.
I think we lost him. I think he dropped out.
Oh, okay.
I see a number that ends in 677 with their hand up. if you'd like to speak, let me see if I can unmute. Okay. You can speak if your number ends in 677. Phone number 677 if you'd like to contribute a comment. Yeah, we can hear. Yep, we can hear you.
Yes. Yes, they definitely turn on, and they've been there for almost a year now. Yes, yes.
Okay. All right, I'm going to...
So, Kathy,
you are muted.
So, Kathy?
Yes.
Is that the location that they wanted to move the Hawk light to?
Initially, they wanted to move the Hawk, but the SHPO office, the State Historical Preservation Office, did not want a Hawk signal. And I would prefer the consistency of RRFBs because we don't have a Hawk anywhere in Ann Arbor. The closest Hawk I'm familiar with is in Ypsilanti. Of course, we have the one at Third, but that's being pulled out.
Yeah.
Press and star that, 6 I think a to hawk mute is, or is unmute yourself. Press star 9 to raise your hand.
The other thing that I want to say is changing the culture. I would agree with Bradley. We have changed the culture. And the way that culture has changed is by making it safer. We don't have... California has a state law, yield for a pedestrian within a crosswalk. It doesn't even say stop for a pedestrian, but because of making it safe at most of the crosswalks, drivers do stop. Now in San Diego on 5-lane roads, I can tell you they do not stop. And in most cases in California where it's dangerous, there's a traffic signal there and pedestrian activated signal. So it makes it much safer. And whoever's calling with the last three digits, 656, if you'd like to join us with video, if you send Kathy Griswold an email, I will send you the video link.
That would be kgriswold@a2gov.org?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm going to move on to, let me scroll through. DC2, this is Lori Terrace. I think we're all excited about Lori Terrace. I wrote about this in my newsletter. People do not understand, like, this was first presented to us like in October of 2019. And so all of us, I think I can speak for all of us, have been just really excited to be free to speak about it, because we were told that it was very hush hush when it was first proposed. It was a very sensitive negotiation, and now it's just, and they've been hammering out details. And so now we can finally talk about this very exciting news. Who would like to talk about it? It's too bad we don't have Jeff here or the mayor. I'm going to probably add myself as a co-sponsor. I don't know how Jeff and Taylor got to be a co-sponsors. I think we should all be co-sponsors. It's like very exciting. For those who don't know, Bradley, I know that you're fairly new to town. I consider myself fairly new to town. I moved here in 2004. I did not fully understand what kind of a development Lori Terrace is. It is below market rate rent for seniors, but it has not been means tested. What I mean to say is that you don't have to demonstrate poverty in order to be a resident there. It's just one of these things where it was a nonprofit foundation that was managing it, and they were keeping rents low. And we found out that they were considering a sale. They had a proposal, an offer, and the board was ready to sell, but they did feel this pull of, you know, that we had a mission, and our mission was to maintain this below market rate rental housing units for seniors. It would be great if we could transfer the property and still anticipate our mission continuing moving forward. And so they approached the city, and there was some sensitive negotiations trying to figure out how to cobble together a plan where the financing would be there and there would be a way to make it work. And Jennifer Hall did a whole lot of work in trying to find the grant money and the HUD programs that would finance this thing. And she was able to put it together. And it's just very exciting that these housing units are going to be preserved. The bulk of the residents right now are in the level of income that even if they were means tested, they would still live there. There are, I guess there's a small number of residents there who are fairly affluent and like probably could afford to live somewhere else, but are taking advantage of the low rents. And so at any rate, we're not displacing anyone. Everyone who's living there now is going to continue to live there if they would like to. And moving forward, as those residents leave, the new residents will be subject to, you know, the same kind of means testing that typically happens for affordable housing, where if you have, I think if there are certain percentages, I think 60% of the residents are going to have to be at less than a certain percentage of AMI, and 40%. And it's all in the agenda, but it's going to be structured as a more typical affordable housing development, where the people who live there are the people who need affordable housing, and like 136 units, I think. It's a really good thing. Does anybody have anything to add? Is there any big detail that I missed?
Well, I would just note that it's setting out the income limits as if these people were wage earners, you know. So a portion of them will be 60% of AMI, and a portion of them will be 80% of AMI. But typically people 62 or older have less income than a wage earner. You know, if you're retired, you're already making a fraction of what you made during your prime wage earning. So that makes me a little nervous. 80% of AMI for somebody who's retired is a rather high income retiree. But otherwise, I'm really excited that we're going to preserve this senior housing, and we're going to start requiring means testing for eligibility to live there. So.
Well, I mentioned this at my coffee hour earlier this afternoon. I've had a few conversations with Jennifer Hall in the last couple of months, and when I've had an opportunity to talk to her, I've been asking her in the last couple of months, like, so how's the Lori Terrace deal going? How close are we to being able to announce that? That's very exciting. She explained to me a very interesting detail, I thought, because I don't know a whole lot about housing issues. She said that Lori Terrace actually offers meals. There's a dining room and they have a commercial kitchen. And this is part of the tenancy agreement for the current residents, that there's a meal plan. And something about federal funding for housing like this, it's prohibited that there be a kitchen like this providing meals. I thought that was interesting. And so she said that they were actually trying to bridge this conflict where the federal funding required that there not be these meals served from a commercial kitchen. And yet the current tenants are part of a rental agreement that has this meal plan. And I haven't had the opportunity to talk to her ask her how she reconciled that. But when I mentioned this at my coffee hour, somebody asked me about what the apartments actually look like. The residents at Lori Terrace do have a kitchen in their unit. So it's not that they need meals served to them, but the meal plan, I guess, was part of the benefits of living in Lori Terrace. It was just sort of part of the services that they provided. So, So, I mean, we owe a big thank you to Jennifer Hall and the Housing Commission for doing all the heavy lifting of sorting this out, and our legal department, of course, as well. Our legal department had to do a lot of negotiation to make all of the pieces fall into place, but it's a really exciting thing. Does anybody in our meeting have any comments? Anybody in attendance tonight have any comments they'd like to share on this topic? I hear clicking from the phone number that ends in 656. Is that you, Michelle?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, okay. I put up my hand just to say this is Janet Cannon, and I just tuned in to see what was going on. I have another concern, which is really very different from your agenda. So, in fact, I'm writing you guys a letter to ask for the information about that.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, you know,
but
at the
I'm
end,
now
we're
I'm just listening.
Well, we, you know, the other thing is that we might finish our agenda quite early, and then you could, whatever it is, you could bring it up, and we could talk about it at the end.
Okay, I'll hang on then and do that. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, because I think we're almost done. All right. So.
Okay.
Two more things is all.
Yeah, just two more things.
Before we move on this item, I just want to point out that the $4 million price tag for this development is quite a bargain for this amount of housing. All of the development on these city-owned properties that we're talking about are multi-million dollar projects, well in excess of this price. And so this was really a great opportunity. I'm pretty pleased about it.
The host will be informed that you would like to speak.
I just wanted to highlight the bit about the 5 FTE.
I think that Jane asked a question about that because it is interesting. It's only $260,000. And it's hard. I think Jane might have asked a question. I was looking at 5 FTEs and $260,000, and it didn't seem like those numbers had anything to do with each other. I think that some of the FTEs are part-time. I think the $260,000 might actually cover the 5 FTEs. Did you understand the questions to the agenda that way, Jack?
I don't remember reading that particular question, and I was looking for my answers here, and I don't see them either, so I apologize.
Yeah, because Jane asked a question about that, because, you know, Jane always asks every question about, like, you know, where's the money coming from? And she asked one of the classic Jane money questions, and the way I read the response, but like I said, it would be worth looking at the questions to the agenda, because this was a question. It really is a pretty clean deal. There's not much extra expense that's worth questioning. Like Jack said, it's quite a deal that we've struck. And I'm pretty sure the $260,000 is staffing for Lori Terrace basically to like help serve the residents there. I think I'm pretty sure that's the deal. I see a hand up, the phone number that ends in 677.
You are unmuted.
That's Michelle.
Yeah, and we are actually adding units if you consider the fact that we are controlling them. These units at Lori Terrace were not regulated in any particular way except for the fact that they were managed by a foundation that had the goal of maintaining below market rate rents. So, all right. So the next item on the agenda, Michelle, I'm going to ask that you turn your sound down.
You are muted.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda is DC3, and this is outdoor seating for Drip House Coffee on Main Street. This is the coffee shop. I don't know how long it's been open, but it feels like it's relatively new. It's in Ward 4, so staff contacted Jack and I was the first to respond and said, sure, I'll sponsor it. It's the coffee shop in the northwest corner of Main and Stadium. And I guess it was, wasn't it previously like a phone shop and a tanning salon? Well, now it's a coffee shop, and they need special permission to do outdoor seating for the purpose of, you know, social distancing and all of the things that we're doing now in the pandemic. And we have to explicitly approve it because under the usual arrangements of our code, where a restaurant can just simply do this as a seasonal thing, there's a restriction on the percentage of outdoor seating relative to the indoor space. And this will be more than, it will exceed the code. At any rate, it's sort of a formality. It doesn't look like a great big deal. It's just three parking spaces in that lot. They're going to have seating outdoors. And they're going to, it's going to extend to November 1st. That was the expectation that might be a reasonable date when you could just say that the season is over and outdoor seating will stop. So anybody have any comments on that?
Well, I'll just chime in because I was offline for a minute. I might have to come back to talk about Lower Eight Terrace for a second, but on this one, I will just share our experience with the downtown street closures, that once, at the very beginning when we talked about it, there was a lot of hesitation on to whether this was a good idea. So far so good, I can report, thankfully. And even more is all the emails we get from business owners and managers of these restaurants and other businesses who are really thankful for this. So I could just share from that point of view that I would support this. And I know it's a very tough time for small businesses, as all of us know. And, every little bit helps right now. And so I would support this, and hopefully we can continue to support the other street closures now that the University of Michigan has announced no football. So there'll be no football games, which was a big concern of ours with the other street closings. But without the football coming back, I think we could be a little bit more comfortable making these decisions.
I agree. I just got a text from somebody who's been trying to raise their hand and they haven't been acknowledged. The phone number ending in 194. What would you like to share?
You have to unmute her.
Oh, I have to unmute. Okay. Ask to unmute. You have to unmute yourself.
How do you,
Rita?
Do
oh, wait, maybe Kathy has to unmute her.
You are unmuted.
I believe 194 is Janet.
No, it's Rita.
No,
it's Rita. She is trying to do star 6. It's star 9, Rita. Star 6? Oh, star 6 is unmute. But star
You're
9
unmuted.
Is raising your hand, I thought.
You are unmuted.
All right, we're struggling. Okay, Rita, if you...
Kathy, you
can ask
you
her to
muted.
Unmute, but I can't unmute her.
Okay, Rita, you have to hit star 6 to unmute yourself. Wait a second. Let's see.
Okay, 1 minute.
All right. I don't know. Okay, all right, it's not working, so we're gonna go on. Okay, the next item is DC4. Well, actually, did I ask, no, does anybody wanna talk about drip coffee? Anybody who's in it, okay. The last item on our agenda is DC4, and this is the resolution to extend that we're amending a previous resolution about the street closures on the weekend downtown. I think several of us got contacted with feedback that the Sunday closure at 8 p.m. was very awkward for some of the businesses who would have liked to continue evening hours and basically like everything's getting packed up during these hours when they would be able to continue business. And so we're basically like, where previously the Sunday hours, the Sunday street closures ended at 8 p.m. Excuse me, we're extending them to 11:59 to give the businesses that much more opportunity.
So thank you. If I can jump in, myself and Amber Lum have been working with the associations and Tom Crawford, the DDA, all summer long. When this was last brought to council, it was supposed to be brought back with different hours than it actually was last approved for. We talked about this extending the time to, I think, 10 p.m. at that time. But when it came to council, it had a clerical error. Nobody brought it up, and it still stayed at 8 o'clock. And like you said, that really hampered a lot of activity for folks who, you know, in the industry, we have turns. They call them turns. And your second and your third turn for dinner would be interrupted with an 8 or 9 o'clock shutdown. So the associations have been asking for more because this has turned into something extremely successful for them. So they've asked actually to have this street closures start on Thursdays and go all the way to Sunday. And we didn't feel necessarily comfortable with that because there were some people who this does affect in a negative way. But with Sunday street closures, the streets are already closed. Things are already set up. We're really not putting anybody out by just extending this for a few more hours. Furthermore, this will probably get pulled off the agenda because in the last resolution that we passed, it gave the city administrator powers to extend or contract the times and days. So after we put this on the agenda, we realized it doesn't even necessarily need council approval. So Tom Crawford may ask, or somebody may ask, to have this actually taken off the agenda tomorrow because the existing resolution gives him the authority to do this.
Yeah. Well, I'm just glad, honestly, like every time, and I think all of us feel the same way, every time we get an email from a business owner saying, like, if you did this, it would help our business, I'm just looking for everything that we could possibly do to support local businesses because we know that this is just a terrible time. None of us want to see these businesses go under. Kathy, what do you want to say?
Yes, I can't raise my hand as a co-host, but I was down on Main Street today checking because some people had told me that the barricades were removed at 10 a.m. right now. And I checked with the attendant at the gas station and I just asked him what time the barricades were removed. And he said 10 a.m. and 10 p.m. So I think that maybe the city administrator or someone has already extended the time, but I agree it needs to be extended again until 11:59. And it sounds like it was extended for 2 hours and no one even noticed.
That is true. And
so good thing.
Tom actually sent the email out to the associations to notify them that this change to 12 or 11:59 took effect immediately. So tonight they'll be going until 11:59, perhaps.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that doesn't upset anybody, but just to bring everybody up to speed, I apologize, but yeah, this is perhaps one of the few hiccups that we had. This program has been overall extremely successful.
Yeah, and I see your hand up.
Kathy can finish her thought
first. Oh, I just want to say I wouldn't even consider it a hiccup. I would consider it a successful agile program where the city administrator was able to make changes as needed and it didn't cause any problems.
Right.
Or I might say problems we didn't hear of. So what yeah. I'm saying from Councilmember Ramlawi, then that you're saying it's okay if this is pulled off the agenda for staff to make the final decisions, that you would, it's not that you would prefer that council make the decision.
Well, I appreciate that, Councilmember Bannister, because Tom Crawford actually asked me that same question. And I said, absolutely not. We have the trust, you have our confidence to make these decisions. Please do so. When we don't need to be bogged down in these kind of things, we ought not to be. And so Tom asked me how I felt, and I said, no, please. We went back and looked at the prior resolution that gave him the authority, and I just wanted to make sure that's what was in the case that explicitly gave him the authority. And once I saw that for the second time, I was like, have at it.
Mm-hmm. So because he's been working closely both with Councilmember Lum and Councilmember Ramlawi and all of the downtown businesses, and I trust him implicitly. And so I don't mind him having this discretion because we really do want to be flexible.
Okay, yes, and it wasn't the noise, the residents down there saying it was too noisy for them or something like that.
I haven't received one of those emails. Not one.
Mm-mm. I haven't gotten an email like that either.
Just from the sound district people, the sound people lately.
Well, there was some music going on at a local establishment after 10 p.m., and people were upset about sound, but that was not in the area that the streets were closed. That was in an area outside of these street closures.
Oh, thank you. Well, while we're on support for local business, I just wanted to say one of the loose ends that I have not been able to resolve that is hit a brick wall is that at Braun Court, Councilmember Griswold might recall, and a few other council members mm-hmm. have heard about this. Braun Court wanted to spend about $200 to do a cast iron arbor entrance to the Braun Court historic buildings. And staff's process results in a full $1,000 fee to get this cast iron arbor, gateway little thing created. And I went around with staff about, how can we help local business make their places attractive and improved and magical and pretty with art and all this without charging them, five times the value of the piece itself, just for the city's fee. And at that time, Mr. Delacorte, who's normally very helpful, he was like, it would require a major overhaul of fees if we were to work to dissect why it was $1,000 for this otherwise wonderful support for local business.
So could we just have a resolution where we waive the fee?
That's what I wanted. Derek was, Mr. Delacorte was saying that was, we can't just do it on a one-off.
I think that if we recognize it as public art and we acknowledge the value of public art and move to waive that $1,000 fee, that I believe that we can do it. But you should pose that question to the city attorney's office, and you should copy me on your inquiry.
Thank you, Councilmember Eaton. I will.
And I share your frustration.
That's unfortunate.
The host will be informed.
We have a fourth ward resident who simply wants to put in a fence, and it's going to cost them like $3,000 worth of surveying and extraneous things just to get through the permitting process. And it just makes you realize how burdensome our permitting process is.
Jack, that's not quite the story.
I'm on my way out. I can make shit up.
I was going to say, that's not quite what's going on, but okay. So well, Ollie, what were you going to say?
No, before we move on, was it $3,000?
It wasn't, though. I started things out. It's not $3,000. The problem is it's like they would need a variance, and the variance they're not likely to get. That's the bigger problem. Yeah.
Well, I just think sometimes we go a little too far with mm-hmm. our codes and the building permit process, and we are not very friendly to those smaller projects for the homeowner or the small businesses who don't have the resources that large businesses have, and you're stymied, and you don't get things done, and you have less collaboration between a bunch of small businesses and a bunch of entrepreneurs. They can't afford to do this. And if they do it, whatever they sell or whatever they do is going to have it priced in. So it just leads to more expensive, whatever it is, whether it's a service or a product. And that's what we end up having, is that it costs so much to do business that, you know, it's why it costs so much for a coffee in Ann Arbor. It's why it costs so much, you know, to get a lunch or whatever it is. Our gas prices are more. Everything is more in Ann Arbor. And part of the reason is some of this bureaucratic tape. And that's what ends up happening.
Right.
I'm not saying do away with these protections, but make a more, you know, common sense approach.
I see a hand up from the phone number that ends in 677. Do you have something to share?
You are unmuted. You are muted.
Thank you, Michelle. And I would just add that you have to be a very tenacious council member, because you will get, we've been working on this for 2 months and getting the slow walk and the runaround. And so I'm glad we had a minute tonight to talk about it and to get your all support for keeping being tenacious about it, because I've been getting a brick wall so far.
So if we're done with DC4, I would remind the chair that Ms. Mitchell still wants to speak about the Fuller Road.
I understand that. I see Eric Sturgis just put his hand up. Eric, would you like to talk? Eric, did you have something to say? You might have to unmute yourself. Use *6.
Yeah, sorry. I don't want to talk about DC4. I want to talk about something not on the agenda, so I'm happy to wait if Rita or someone else wants to talk about DC4 or something on the agenda.
Okay. Well, Rita's been waiting a while. Here we go, Rita. All right. Unmute yourself, Rita. However you do it. Let's see.
I got it.
Hey. All right. Excellent.
Thanks, you all. Sorry about the technical problems. I assume that you've done the consent agenda discussion mm-hmm. earlier. Did you touch on the Fuller Park lease?
We talked about it a little bit. We were remembering a previous conversation when Councilmember Hainer had suggested that we really could make more of an effort to be conscious of environmental concerns. I remember the last time this lease came up, Jeff was suggesting that we should probably be trying to negotiate things like chargers for electric vehicles. And that's really about as far as we got, I think.
Right. Okay. So I have been away from home for the day, so I haven't had time to do a full review of information, and I wasn't on top of this agenda item coming forward. So I'm a little bit out of sync here, but I did see a note from the last time it was renewed in 2018. And there was a talk, a mention of a discussion about the lease that I don't think really happened. I mean, I guess one could say that it happened in PAC. I didn't PAC meeting. So my reason for interest in this is long term. You all know that I've been interested in the proposals for a train station there and retaining this property as parkland owned by the city. So it's not clear to me. I've been trying to track down the right version of the lease that's being proposed. It's not clear to me whether the lease being proposed is addressing university access for the usual limited daytime hours, or if it's going to 24/7 for the south lot. So that's one thing that I'd like to confirm. And also the what is a reasonable lease payment from the university for use of that property. I think that is a reasonable request because the university changed the access to allow the higher, more expensive tickets to be using it now instead of the yellow lot, which was a quite an expensive rate. It's now blue at least, or possibly gold, which means that the university makes a lot of money out of everybody who parks there compared to what it used to. So there are a bunch of issues that I see with this.
Well, Rita, real quick, the university is increasing their payment to the city of about almost $40,000, I think, because mm-hmm. of that change in the permit. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what amount the university is going to be collecting in addition to, but the city is receiving a larger share, a larger payment because of that change in the permits that are allowed to park there. So there's that. And again, I don't know what, if we're getting dollar for dollar or 10 cents in a dollar, I'm not quite sure. And then this is a 1-year lease with options for renewal.
It's a renewal based on administrative renewal or council review?
That'll have to take a deeper dive in. I think it's council, but I can lean on my colleagues who maybe have it in front of them.
Okay.
Just so that you know, I've sat in on a couple of meetings with representatives from the Park Commission and staff and university representatives to discuss this. I think they invited me because I've been problematic in the past on this subject.
Thank you very much.
It's what I do. And the price has increased to reflect the increase in the what is it, blue to yellow?
Mm-hmm.
But and they're also getting
yellow
to blue. But they've also increased the number of hours that parking lots are available substantially. So they're probably making out fairly well here. My position on this, though, is that right at this point in time, we can't forego any source of revenue. Our budget is really tight. You know, we're currently $6 million over revenue for the next year. And so I just didn't see pushing back really hard on this. There's also a clause in the new contract where if they change the status of this parking, like from yellow to blue on the other portion, or from blue to gold, that there's an escalator or a renegotiation of the price to reflect that increase as well. So I think that Colin Smith did a good job of foreseeing that we might raise and has addressed them. I'm really reluctant to push back on this just because of how tight our revenue is.
So I'm actually suggesting that it may not be enough.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, I think that right at this point in time, the university is similarly pressed for dollars. And fewer students coming back, they could probably locate this parking somewhere else. And so it is a revenue source for us. I understand your concerns. I've shared those concerns in the past. I don't think my colleagues know, but I asked for an update on the status of the train station plans. I was informed that nothing has happened. The Federal Rail Administration has yet to approve our environmental assessment. It's just sitting there stagnant at the FRA. So nothing's moving ahead on this. Uh-huh. I mean, that's my real fear, is that this is going to be converted from parking lot to parking structure.
That's absolutely my concern. Yeah, I'm concerned that about having adequate input, just a whole lot of different things, and completion of the environmental assessment that has not been completed.
Yeah. But as far as just the lease itself, mm-hmm. Without regard to how we negotiate the lease, it has an out clause. So as soon as we decide to build a train station and parking structure there, we give 90 days notice and we're off to the races. And that will be up to a council that I won't be included in. And I think that they will be favorably inclined to doing horrible things on this property. So this contract will alter that evaluation.
Jack, sorry to interrupt. That would require 8 votes, correct? Not just 7 or 6.
Well, the sale of city parking land requires 8 votes, but I don't know that a long-term lease would have that same requirement.
I think the other thing is that the city can do what it wants with its own property, and that's been our long-term problem.
Structure on park land is an unanswered question, and unless somebody wants to litigate it, I think that it would move forward pretty easily.
Right. So the big change really is that it's a 24/7 access for parking. That's huge.
Well, the one thing is, there's not an open free market when it comes to deciding what the value is on this lot. There are two main users, and that's the university and people who use Fuller Pool and Fuller Park and the surrounding area. So it's not so easy to get an appraisal on what this is really worth. We can go off of what they're collecting and what they're charging. I share the concerns you have, but also it's not as easy to find this is worth, because there's only 2 segments of our community that has value, in it.
Well, actually, we could talk about that in another forum, perhaps, but that's not really the issue that I am concerned about right now. It's because it is public property, it could be repurposed. That's what makes it easy.
It is a 35% increase from the current revenues that we get from the property.
Mm-hmm.
That's not small.
Yep. Okay. Well, as long as the renewal is not an administrative one, it would really be great if it came back to council again.
It actually is an administrative renewal. Duly noted.
All right. Eric Sturgis, I know that you wanted to make a comment. What did you want to say?
Oh, can I talk about something that's not on the agenda now for a
minute?
Yep,
we are done with the agenda, so you can talk.
So the city administrator search, I just want to make a couple comments. I reached out to some of you. I think there are really 2 strong candidates from all the research that I have done. My hope would be that we don't just go with Tom because he's there and he has done a good job. My hope is that we really take a look at some of the other candidates. I think this is probably the biggest, you know, hire that we're going to make. And one of the things I think you need to look at is the HR. There's been a lot of issues there. And I think maybe having someone outside who lives in Washtenaw County, who has experience coming in, could maybe help stabilize things as well as help with the morale. I think it's also important that they're strong supporters of the police chief. So I would just, you know, obviously there's the interviews on Thursday and you know, I'm going to watch intently, but I would just ask that we not just go with Tom because he's there. I mean, Tom has done a great job. There's no question, but I think we have some other good candidates. And I think the last thing I would say about it is in the time of COVID, you know, we want someone who can deal with, you know, budget crisis and tough budget numbers. And I think someone who dealt with a $1 million budget deficit in a city like eCourse and fix that has that experience. So I would just really ask you guys to take a look at some of the candidates and take a strong look at some of the outside candidates. That's it. I know I'm glad this council's deciding, let's be honest, and not the new council. I'm really glad and I trust the decision that this council makes. And I'm so glad that you guys are the ones that get the decision. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Eric. Does anybody else have a comment they'd like to make before we adjourn? We're going to adjourn super early. It's a miracle.
Was Janet Cannon on the line?
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yes. You wanted to make a comment. Yes. Share with us.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. This is not an Ann Arbor concern, but I'm hoping that you can just give me your point of view as to whether it's fruitful. And I'm really sorry to hit you with this at the end of a long night because it's very heavy. But I have just been reading accounts of the violence against the protesters in Kalamazoo, which is getting very close to home for that kind of thing. And the way it's one of those patterns where the Proud Boys and other militia types came in to beat up on peaceful protesters and very severely, and the police in the town protected the Proud Boys and not the protesters, and added on with, you know, the pepper spray and all of that stuff. And my question is, and usually when we talk about police oversight, we're talking about problems of individuals being disciplined or, you know, preventing individual acts against community members. But in this case, I mean, does a city council have the right to give a directive, a very constraining directive to their police force in this kind of a situation? Say there's a disturbance of the peace, there's protest, you are required to stop the violence and to arrest the people bringing in the violence. And if that is really the case, if you're able to, you know, make that kind of direct policy directive to your police force, would it be a fruitful thing for citizens to start coming in and just inundating your city council saying, we want police, we want you to oversee the police? Sorry, it's a bit heavy and you might not want to answer tonight.
It looks like Kathy and Jack both have an answer to this. Jack, do you want to comment on this?
Let Kathy go first.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I am a former social worker from Detroit, and I have been to at least 50% of the marches, maybe more than that. And I can tell you that our police have been there for every march and have been there to protect the people involved in the protest, as well as other members of the community. And we take this very, very seriously. And that's one of the reasons I have been there. I have complete confidence in our police department right now and in our police chief. So I think that what you could do would be to state that you have confidence and that you are positive with what actions have been taken to date by the Ann Arbor Police Department. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we need a separate resolution because I can tell you I've been there and I've seen what's happening.
Kathy, that's not my question at all. I'm saying okay. I am very aware that the Ann Arbor Police has been absolutely correct and the Sheriff's Department as well, that they have done the job as I'm describing, you know, that as a normal police officer ought to do. But in the case of towns like Kalamazoo, or even in Detroit, because I have friends who've been brutalized in the demonstrations in Detroit, is a city council empowered to set policy and to require their police force to follow a policy of not protecting protecting protesters and arresting and impeding the violent types?
So are you asking us to
just from your experience, is that something that could happen in a general city council situation?
I think I understand your question. You're wondering if we can, if the way the power is structured, if we direct police, is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
Okay.
So would the citizens of Kalamazoo be in a fruitful position to go to their city council and say, we want our police to be doing this?
I think so. And so on repeated occasions, we have directed our police on how to conduct themselves with regard to certain issues. One of the things that I was very active in is how we interact with immigrant populations in our city. And we just simply informed our police department that we weren't interested in collecting data about immigration status and things like that. A city council is well within its rights to direct its police department as to what its priorities are at a policy level. I don't think that we have to do it here in Ann Arbor.
I don't think so either.
In Kalamazoo, the city council can and probably should emphasize their priorities.
The host will be informed that you would like to speak.
And law enforcement should be neutral when it comes to public acts of violence. You know, neither a demonstrator nor a counter demonstrator should be favored by the police. It should be a peacekeeping role. And I understand your concerns. And so, yes, that they absolutely should. Coincidentally.
So that might be a good way to actually counter that, because I really see this kind of stuff as the beginnings of a very, very likely civil war with all around Trump and all of that stuff.
Yep.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
I share
Thank you for
concern.
Your expert opinions. Yeah, I know. I'm sure everybody does. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Anne, did you want to add to this?
Yes. Well, I did. I'm surprised Michelle hasn't raised her hand because
she has. She has. I think I'm going to call on her next. Yeah.
On her phone.
I had Michelle had urged us as Ann Arbor City Council to make a resolution, a proclamation that we condemned this sort of police behavior, whether it's Portland or Kalamazoo or wherever. And so Michelle and I forwarded that to our senior staff, and they said it was very complicated legally and liability, and it would take us a lot of time and everything.
Interesting.
But now, so it there it lay then is a roadblock. But now that it's happened in Kalamazoo, I had run, you know, maybe this is something that the mayor needs to weigh in on. Would he support our city doing, making a statement?
So I would just point out that we would be probably offended if another town told us how we should conduct our policing. You know, so if some conservative little corner of Michigan told us that we should be busting heads or something, we would take great offense. And I'm always reluctant to tell other elected bodies how they should conduct their, I mean, that's what makes Ann Arbor special, is that we don't do that mm-hmm. shit. And so I'm hesitant to tell another elected body how it should behave. I would certainly pass a resolution emphasizing our values and encouraging others to find it within themselves to not do that sort of thing, but to specifically ask a particular town not to do the horrible things that they're doing. I think it falls on deaf ears. And then second, I think that there would be a reaction to it rather than an accommodation to our wishes.
Right. No, it would be more fruitful would be the citizens of each town which is concerned to just get enough people going into their city council that become a protest in itself, you know. And
you know, I appreciate Councilmember Eaton's comments, but I would press upon the elected bodies with more power than us if I was to make a request. But yeah, to ask another city or township, I think is probably going to be taken the wrong way and not going to be productive, not give us the results, and make us seem pompous in some ways. I think we need to lead by example. I think we need to be the beacon. We need to be the community that every community tries to emulate. And fortunately, when it comes to this issue, currently we have an edge. And hopefully we maintain that edge. And I don't think it's a reasonable request or concern or call to make for folks to make to their city council. I think it's important to be reminded of this, especially at a time like now. So even though we can't necessarily act in ways that members in the community ask us to, it's good to be reminded of what we are elected to do and the values that we're supposed to have and exercise. So, you know, fortunately, again, it's not a problem, but we must stay vigilant. We can't rest on our laurels and think that we're going to continue to be that way without diligence.
True. Okay, I think I'm satisfied in terms of my answer to my question. So I'd say thank you very much for your opinions.
May I just add, and I apologize for not listening well and instead just talking about how wonderful our police chief is and our sheriff. So I probably need to also mention Lisa Jackson and our Independent Community Police Oversight Committee. So we have many examples, but maybe we could do something at the state level.
Well, I'm not sure if you received the correspondence from Dr. Jackson, but she was just appointed to the board of police oversight commissions. I don't know the exact title. I probably didn't get it right there, but yeah, we're lucky to have that. Somebody who's serving here in our community going to be on at the state level when it comes to policing issues.
We just signed off on a resolution at the congressional district level in support of police oversight, and she had some great contributions to make to it. Now that would be an appropriate thing too, whereas it would be tricky for one town to tell another town what they thought of its practices. However, the Washtenaw Dems can certainly do a resolution in support of that kind of policing.
And Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, I know she left the Unity Luncheon last Sunday and went to a Blue Lives Matter rally in the Downriver area. And so it's very important that we don't let evil forces divide our police department from Black Lives Matter and our community. And there are those forces there. And I think the Congresswoman is very aware of it, and she's trying to balance the different groups.
bridge the divides. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, listen, thank you all so much, and I am going to sign off, and I hope you all have a very good evening.
Thanks for participating.
Sure.
Bye-bye. I think Eric and Michelle may have their hands up. I don't know if that's from a previous discussion.
Yeah, Michelle, would you like to speak? Did you have a comment? Phone number 677. All right. Eric, would you like to, do you have something to share?
I was just going to say, I agree with what council members Eaton and Lamwali said, and I think it's important that we show our police department the support right now. And mm-hmm. I think when we pass these resolutions, it becomes a concern potentially to some of the police officers that we're not supporting them. And our police are doing a great job here, and I think it's very important that if we are going to pass resolutions with you know, directives or opinions, that we make sure we make a strong statement that we support our police chief, we support our police force here, you know. And I'm hearing this from people on the ground who are in the police department that, you know, they're concerned with the perception. So I would just caution us that if we are going
to, unmuted.
You guys are going to do that, please look at making it very clear that we support our police department.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, have the mayor bring it. Tell the mayor to bring it to council. He is the mayor.
We will work with the mayor. Okay.
I will.
It's a little bit more powerful when it comes from him. There's one of him and 10 of us. So
I would actually have Julie Grand bring the resolution.
So I would suggest that a more effective route would be to vote in November. We can send whatever we want. If we send something to this administration, we'll fall on deaf ears. Whereas if we send a new administration, this problem will take care of itself.
I guess my only comment is that we are lucky in the state of Michigan that we have leadership at the state level that is supportive of us. I would almost be more frantic to do what you're talking about if I felt like we didn't already have a mouthpiece in Lansing that's doing it for us. You know, I really feel for the people who live in states where their state leadership is in lockstep with Trump. those are the states where, like, I feel like if I was in a local municipal government in one of those states, like, I would want to be, like, shaking my fist and screaming lots and lots, because I would know that the people at the state level are not speaking on my behalf. But I hear what you're saying, Michelle. I really do. I mean, you know, I was at that demonstration. Like, this is horrifying. It should be horrifying to everybody. But I tend to agree that the truth is that, like, a comment or a resolution or a public statement from our body is we just all need to get out in November. We need to get out in November. And I think we also, I am hopeful that we're doing everything that we can locally to make sure that the fears that you express, that I share, honestly, our election in November is going to happen in a legitimate way in our community. And I think that all of us here who have any ability to reach out and be helpful in other communities where there are concerns. I understand that Detroit, there are worries about what's going to happen there. I understand that there are opportunities to volunteer in Detroit and help with their elections. I mean, there are just a lot of ways that we can express ourselves and make a difference.
Can I just speak? I'm sorry to interrupt again, but I'm good at that. We have so much, just a finite amount of resources, you know, in our legal department. We cannot spend on missions that don't have a return on the effort. And I appreciate what Councilmember Nelson said and my other colleagues on this issue. And I appreciate the concerns and passion that our residents have on it. But we also need to be cognizant of the limited amount of resources we have in City Hall. And we can be passing resolutions all day long that will not get us the return on our investment, or we can be working on issues that we actually can make differences on. And I'm sorry to sound like this, but we've been told before how terrible council members are and how expensive it is for other parts of our city to operate when we have certain council members in office. And so I'm very cognizant of the resources, the taxpayer dollars, and the effectiveness of those resolutions that we pass. And passing resolutions that have no impact, that consume city resources, in my opinion, is not where I want to go. I'm sorry. If it gets to that level, then absolutely we'll have two hands on deck. But I think it's a mismanagement of our resources to send our staff on issues that have no meaningful results or impact on the issues that concern us, that truly are issues that do concern us. We're not absolving ourselves of responsibility, but we're trying to manage the little bit of resources we have to get us the biggest impact.
Thank you, Ollie.
Our legal department is slow to get back to us on meaningful things locally. They're extremely slow on getting back to us on local ordinances, on local issues. We just heard tonight the development on Green Road in Plymouth. We still haven't heard anything back from our legal department. So we have local issues that we need to direct our staff to tackle.
Sorry. I think you make it. I can agree with a lot of what you said, Ollie, honestly. Anne, your hand's been up for a while. Did you have something to add?
Well, I had two topics. One was the U of M students coming back. I'm still hearing a lot from residents that they are going to, like, go into hibernation big time, that they're stockpiling, getting their pantries ready, that if the kids come back, they are not, they're going to be really scared about the social distancing. And they've attended some U of M meetings, and U of M says everything about their oversight of the kids is only while they're on campus. They don't have any jurisdiction for all the students who live off campus. And so, yes, I wanted to bring that up.
Well, this is something that we're actually telling our staff to go do right now. And myself and Council Member Lum, on the heels of this discussions on street closures and everything else with Michael Rain from the university, with Tom Crawford and others, are instructing our legal department to work with the county and drafting a local ordinance to deal with this just issue. So heads up, there will be something coming to council, hopefully before Labor Day, perhaps at the August 24th session, if the work can get done in time on this same issue. So again, I'm just saying this on the heels of my last comment, that this is where I want to spend our legal department's time.
Kathy, did you want to add something?
The president of the university and the mayor had a video addressing this topic that was on MLive. They were interviewed. But they're also relying on the student leaders to set a good example and sort of control the student behavior. And I think it's going to take more than that. We have fraternities in Ann Arbor that are no longer part of the Greek life system because they did not follow the university's rules. And so I think we have to have very specific expectations so that we don't have a 2-week let's negotiate something. It needs to be very specific. And if you break the rules, then there are consequences.
And the university is falling back on the county and establishing those rules. You know?
Good, good.
Right. You know, so the county does have the authority. So the city is working with the county to craft a local ordinance that is word for word or close to it with what the county's, you know, dictates are. So this isn't, you know, obviously when the public learns about it, it's only weeks or months after we've been talking about it. But this is something that's being talked about right now and will be coming for council consideration and reach out and talk with our city administrator to have input on it. But this is something that we are working on, and we do need to work in concert with the county. The university is falling back on that.
Okay. And because it's a public health issue, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So, I'm sorry I don't have all the information, but it's still being formulated, and it's just frustrating because the lack of recognition of the work that goes into these things, and people are being distracted by issues that are not as time sensitive as COVID is. And I don't think people really realize the work that this council has put in and managed to work through this pandemic. I mean, it really, I'm sorry for my colleagues that are outgoing. You did not get the respect and appreciation you deserve. And I know you do. I know what you do. And I know how this body acts in closed session and how people work hard at things and put aside their differences. And I wish the public saw that. I wish the public saw how we work, on our different assignments. And this other issue that we're just talking about is another one of those where the work is getting done. It's not being publicized now. And when it does, it's only after weeks and months of time have gone into it. So I apologize for taking up too much time.
Anne, did you put your hand up again?
I had one last thing that I wanted to quickly follow up on. This was from Rita, and I had talked yesterday, and this is sort of a question for Jack, but also anyone else at this meeting. Another loose end that I am following up on and trying to wrap up is our in the subcommittee of the Environmental Commission, the Natural Features Committee, we, an all-star group of people have been working on the UDC and trying to weave in the protection language for heritage trees landmark trees and registered trees. And it is a very long and tedious process to be going through the UDC. And we are still have several meetings ahead of us. And so my question for Councilmember Eaton and things that Rita and I were discussing, I think it was just yesterday, was, you know, as this new council barrels forward with ADUs without any restrictions and T1 zoning without any restrictions and maybe reducing vehicular miles without any restrictions, would we like to have a standalone resolution for Tree Town that says that we want to celebrate, recognize, protect through education and outreach our trees? It's sort of a blanket statement that as we barrel forward with changes to zoning, that our major trees are not disposable. You can't mitigate by planting 25 baby trees, et cetera. So that was
baby trees.
You know, some people think you can just plant some more, and it doesn't work that way with trees. And so my question, you know, it works that way, but it might take 50, 100 years, 200 years. And so that was the question, if there was any appetite in
mm-hmm.
the group.
There is.
I'm getting an affirmative from Ms. Griswold. What do you think, Jack?
Oh, I hate to speculate what the next council might do.
This is what we're going to do, and I give it two thumbs up.
Okay, is there any profit margin involved?
I would point out that I did distribute to the Natural Features Committee that case that the Michigan Court of Appeals decided that said that you can't pass an ordinance protecting trees. It's a taking under the Constitution. It's just a horrible thought. I'll never speak against baby trees. I like baby trees. But they are no replacement for, you know, butchering mature trees. And I'm flummoxed by our court's decision that a municipality can't legislate against the removal of mature trees on private property. And so I don't know what we can do as our parting shot to try to act in counterbalance to what's about to happen to this community. And so let's just hope that recession lasts long enough to protect the trees.
Rita?
Hi. Yep. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. It's not actually me who wants to talk here, Zed.
Yeah. The solution is if you run for judge.
Go, Jack. And thank you very much for bringing that up. And I think it's worthwhile for us to talk in our meeting tomorrow about that and see what kind of response we might get from our group, and just hope for a middle way.
An education and outreach way, because maybe the individuals just don't know that their tree is disposable.
Yeah, not disposable. Yeah.
It's unprotected.
Right. Got it.
All right. Are we ready to shut it down? Are we ready to pack up the circus?
You certainly have dragged on a really short agenda as long as you could.
I said hardly anything.
We're going to end on trees.
All right.
Oh, trees.
Is this what leadership looks like?
I got to say, I'm in a hot box of a room. I need to get out of here where the air conditioning works better in my house, because this is the stuffiest room in my whole house. Anyway, I'm going to call this meeting to an end. Thanks to everyone who joined us, and we'll see you tomorrow night.
Thank you for chairing.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.